Hey there, Stan.
Yes, here I am.
Great.
Is this for tape?
Yes, this is for broadcast at a later time
Yeah, the
on
only
Triple
reason I'm
Ten.
asking is, like, I'm kind of in a, I'm almost in, like, in a musical rehearsal hall here. There might be some musical bleed. Maybe that'll be okay.
I think that'll be fine. There's a lot of chatter in the background here, so it'll even out.
Okay.
Great. And you're actually in Australia for the first time in about 9 years.
Yeah. Yes. I think the last time we were here was, what, 89 or 87 or 6, or I
87.
don't know.
That's right. Well, I remember it distinctly because I saw you play at Queensland University here.
Oh, really?
And like, I still bump into people who say that like this particular concert was one of the best concerts they've ever seen. So
Oh.
you did a lot of things right.
Well, I'm happy people are listening.
So you
We're
still.
actually down here now because I've started my own record label with a few friends of mine back in the U.S. called Birdcage Records.
Right.
And our slogan is Birdcage Records, the label where artists come to roost. And
That's
we've
lovely.
done an exclusive licensing arrangement down here with TWA Records, who will be putting out all of our recordings. And it's not just mine, there's other recordings by other projects like Hecate's Angels and groups like The Empty Set and a thousand other names, which I guess maybe you'll be hearing about.
Great. And do you actually work with these other people?
Well, I work with them, I guess, on a kind of creative, in a kind of creative capacity, not as a producer, but maybe just in a way, just to kind of as an advisor to get them to finish their damn work. maybe that's what I do.
Great. Hey, you had plans for your new album, Black Diamond. You knew the name of it 4 years ago. How has it taken you all these years to actually get the material together?
I did have that title that long ago. Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, are you had you read that someplace or?
Well, with Stan Ridgway, disinformation that I've had sent to me.
Oh, well. You have disinformation. Well, then you know how disinforming it can be, don't you?
Can be.
Black Diamond, yeah, was the title, and there were some songs that were hanging out. Other ones were, I would say the bulk of it was written last summer. There's that rehearsal hall music again. But the title, yeah, had been around for a while, but it's not the same record anymore. It's the record that's out now.
Right. So you were saying that you're really pleased with this album too, in the information I was sent from Birdcage as well. You say that this it could be one that really defines you or makes it hard to define you.
Well, I am happy with the record because I feel like I mean, I guess I it's certainly in the bios and whatever else, but I do feel it's kind of an old-fashioned record, and it's a lot different than the record I just finished previously to that, which was now coming out on TWA, the Drywall Project.
Right.
And so, if you being a disinformant, you and maybe part of even the dispatch, not quite sure, are you?
Yeah, well, I do
You
get the
have
occasional
email?
hits. No, not yet.
Oh, well, wait till you get that. Wait till you get that, and you'll be, John, you'll be flooded with disinformation junk mail.
Excellent.
And, we do have a web page, too, that's quite stocked now with all kinds of disinformation.
Good.
And, now I'm starting to ramble. What was the question?
Talking about Black Diamond.
Hmm.
And
Oh, and how happy I was with it.
yes.
Boy, am I happy. No, I was happy with the way it turned out because it made me think of the way it sounded when I got through was it reminded me of a lounge that I go to down in Mexico and sometimes stay down in this little hotel right beneath Rosarito Beach. There's a guy in there who looks kind of like a Mexican Dean Martin, and he plays one of those keyboards with the drum machine on them and all kinds of cheesy sounds and whatever else. And he'll sing a country western song, and then the next song he'll sing will be a jazz ballad. The next one he sings, it'll be some sort of novelty song. And the next one he sings is a really poignant, heartfelt, sad song. And this record kind of reminds me of that. And there comes a point when you really do want to make a record that your mom likes.
Yeah. And did your mom really like this?
Yeah, she does like it. She says, She likes it.
Oh, she'd really like said, things like Luther play guitar.
Yeah, she really likes that. She says, now that's music. So, you know, I'm happy for that.
Yeah, well, there's some really pretty songs in it. I like Knife and Fork. It's a great love song.
Yes, I think it is. If one could describe that person as a loving person, I think he is. Yeah, that one's, I couldn't quite finish that one. I had to go on that one. I don't know why.
That's a good
5 minutes.
It was
obsessive, yes. Yeah. There's a video for that, too, that's coming out here that TWH will probably, like, fire off in a little while.
Yep. Well,
and I'm wearing an awfully attractive bathrobe in this video, I must say. I'm one handsome man in this video.
So you were saying, also, you went through a few emotional turmoils as part of writing this, and that's been reflected in the album.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had various stages of real deep depression over, you know, who I am and what I do. I think like anybody, I don't think I'm any different from anybody else, of course. There's been times where I've had to deal with a lot of downs in my life that have had to do with where I thought I would be and what I thought I'd be doing. And you know, how many people are listening at one certain point and how many people aren't. And there comes a point when you really just have to kind of go on with it all, of course. So I think it's I think it's closer, though, to probably more of a personal record for me than maybe some of the other ones in terms of how many of the songs are actually from some real experiences of mine.
Right. So you don't mind people looking at you as being someone who sings stories. You know, I know you don't like to be terribly defined, but this has been something that distinguishes you, I think, from a lot of other artists.
Well, don't you hate it? You know, doesn't anybody hate it when they say, "Hey, you're the guy who's that.
Yep.
You're the guy who does that." And if you have any sense of creativity about yourself at all, you say, "Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. I'll show you this." Now, that can also backfire at times, where you can just be to the point where you're just like behaving like some sort of jumping jack just to do something different. And this record was really just an attempt on my part to just kind of drop the whole facade and just if I felt like singing a country western song, I just would sing one, you know.
Yeah.
And if I felt like doing this way, I would do that. But there's always little bits of me that are going to get in there.
What I was impressed by, too, is that you've not just come up with 12 songs or so that don't sound like anyone else's, and that's pretty damn good out of a whole world full of people making music, but new sounds and combinations of them.
Yeah, well, sounds have always, sounds are the other half of the coin, you know, the other side of the coin when it comes to writing songs and stuff. And, you know, I wrote most of these songs really just on an acoustic guitar, isolating myself from anything that would distract me, like other sounds. Hmm. And once I was finished with them, then I could take them in to, a studio situation. And I really wanted to kind of have some discipline in myself to not put too much on. Usually what musicians do is that they put so much on a track or on a song in the recording process after a while, and I've certainly been guilty of it myself, because it's the phenomenon of making music. It's a time art, and you have to listen to it to be able to see how it's going, and you have to listen to it again.
Yeah.
And again and again. And the phenomenon that happens if you're a restless soul is that you think what you're hearing is possibly not enough. It was last week, but this week, no, it needs more. And so I tried to do this as quickly as possible and not get into that place where I felt I needed to pile on, you know, the production. And I'm happy that I reached that place where I was able to, you know, cross the finish line with it and keep my appetites,
yeah,
at least in a healthy perspective.
Yep. Well, it makes you more enthusiastic to get into your new material as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think songs like Man of Stone, it's a sax solo on that. I thought it sounded like trumpet. Is that my inexperienced ear?
No, it should. That's a trumpet.
Thank God. It says there's no credit for trumpet.
Well, that's Bill Noland playing trumpet. They don't have a credit on there?
No.
Does it say trumpet at all?
No.
I haven't even looked at it.
Nope.
Well, there you go. Well, you come in and do editorial. John, you're hired.
Thank you.
We need someone to check these things. You get a red pen. We'll give you a desk. You don't get a computer yet, but you'll have a pad and a good solid steel frame desk.
Thank God. Well, I happen to be out of work at the moment, too, so that'll be ideal.
Okay.
I really like the Bob Dylan song you do on this, too. Just fabulous.
Yeah, that's one of my, one of many favorite Bob Dylan songs of mine. But I always think that if someone doesn't really like Bob Dylan or they don't understand him, I tend not to trust that person.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like living in the time of, you know, Shakespeare or something. And I'm a lot less self-conscious about, you know, admitting my influences now maybe than I was like, you know, 10 years ago or something. But Bob Dylan's been a big influence on me, and I think almost anybody that writes songs, even though they might not know it,
yeah,
because he's changed music so much.
He's another person who's been given a bit of stick over the years for changes in styles. Hey.
Or... Yeah, well, I think he's a good model for anybody creative that really wants to, produce things and get some things done and get involved in the work, because it really is about that. It's not really about being a something or being known for that or being this is the kind of music that we do or something. I mean, Bob just seems to have followed his muse and trusted his instincts, and not everything that a writer does is going to be, you know, like his best work of all time.
Yeah.
You have to get into the flow of it. I think Bob even said once that, like, you know, every it's not like one song after another, all the songs together, it's like a symphony.
Yes.
And so if you think of it that way, you know, he's written so many songs. You really look at them and examine them, they're incredible. And also people like Neil Young and Leonard Cohen, and you know, those are the people that I look at as that are in the generation above my own, that I look at as models, and they give me faith for continuing to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, Bob Dylan, when he played here in the late 70s, I mean, he did a series of 3.5-hour concerts. With each night that he played at Festival Hall here, his shows actually got longer. And they were superb performances, too.
Oh, I've seen Uncle Bob play a number of times, and I just think it's incredible. I went to one show once where there were some people behind me, and Bob started to sing like a Rolling Stone, but he was singing it like John Coltrane played saxophone.
What?
In other words, his phrasing, he was starting to, he improvised on his phrasing to the point where it was like, once upon a time, just found it, didn't you? You know, and it was just so convoluted and weird and abstract. It was like a Kandinsky painting or something, right?
Yep.
And the people behind me are going, what's he doing, man? Why, what do I got to fuck him? And they got really mad and they were really angry. And I just think it's great. His harmonica playing reminds me a lot of Eric Dolphy sometimes, you know. So it just depends on where you're coming from, I guess.
Right.
Some people look at it, you know, they come on to things in a different way. I mean, I certainly get people sometimes coming to shows with me and going, to them, I'm nothing but camouflage, you know, or something, or I'm nothing but Mexican radio, you know, and that's just, I'm not complaining about it. It's just a reality of things, but you can't let that be your focus, that you're, you know, there to be the human jukebox for people.
Yeah, true.
Got to keep kind of moving along and passing out that disinformation.
Well, you really test limits, I think, for people being able to get into you, I think, with Crystal Palace. It's a great song at the end of the album, but if you were trying to win an audience, you know, and you had to pick one song to play to someone who was going to like Stan Ridgway forever, I don't think it'd be Crystal Palace straight off, would it?
Well, I've had that song now. I've read a few reviews of the record. And I've had that song been described as the worst song on the record, and I've had it been described as the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not sure, but I love that song. I did that in one fell swoop in a couple of days. Wrote it out, did it, sang it, and that was it. And I wrote that pretty much after I knew I wasn't going to be able to own a home.
Right.
And then from that, it became quite another affair. There's some real anger in there.
Fair enough. I know what to look for from now on, because I'd assumed it was a lot more innocent than it's apparently meant to be.
No, I really, most of my songs are actually spring from very personal, you know, experiences, and they can't really come from anywhere else. I mean, any songwriter that doesn't say that, you know, is really doesn't know, or he's lying, you know, because there's no other way to write songs.
Yeah.
You can't just sit down and go, wouldn't this be a nice idea to write a song about this? You'll reach the middle of it, and you'll go, I run out of energy.
Doesn't
it's got to mean something to you.
It doesn't stop Michael Bolton.
Yeah, does he write? he just steals.
Okay, who's Wild Bill Donovan?
Bill Donovan had the nickname Wild Bill Donovan. He was, that song was funny how that fell out. He is the one of the founding fathers of the CIA
right.
in America, and he was the lead spook of the OSS, which was an intelligence unit during World War II. And after World War II, there didn't seem to be a big need for the OSS, but Bill Donovan called a meeting and said, but we're having so much fun. Why don't we make it into something else? We'll call it the CIA, and we'll have an internal intelligence unit for the Americas. And I found his history to be intriguing in terms of, like, how it really was the beginning of a kind of a shadow government.
Yeah.
And not to come off overly paranoid, although there's probably a good reason to be, I felt he needed a song. I just felt there wasn't one for him, and I would be the guy to write it and tell people about who he was and what dangers or warnings or I don't know, maybe it's not. Is he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? It's hard to tell.
Yeah. People really get their impressions of good and bad from the media, and more the media are being controlled by just one or two people.
Well, there you go. So. It is a kind of a interesting age that we live in, because there is a lot of blinded messengers out there.
Yep.
And I always look at all information with a very jaundiced eye in terms of, you know, if it really is the truth or not, you know.
Hmm.
It's the old adage, you can't believe what you read in the newspapers. Well, that's certainly true today.
Yep.
And even fringe information is sometimes, you know, hard to discern.
True.
But that's why I find the internet fairly interesting, because in some ways it is a wealth of information. In another way, it's an opportunity for everyone to lie through their teeth. And it's just incredible the amount of lies that are on the internet in terms of what someone's selling or what they represent or whatever. And in a lot of ways, my own internet contribution, the disinformation web pages, are in a sense battling in contribution to this cause. But I think that's a little enigmatic the way I've left that. You'll just have to check it out.
Okay. Well, we're getting more into that around 4ZZZ, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll certainly catch up with it. You must have been damn pleased with being involved with Rumblefish in producing Don't Box Me In.
Yeah, I thought that was turned out to be quite a successful film and project artistically, although the critics just ripped it to shreds.
Wow. For me, it's when you see that movie, but I haven't drunk alcohol or taken a drug in 2.5 years. But for me, when I bought the video recently and it's on widescreen on videotape, and it was just like being on a type of drug. Just the production of sound and visuals is amazing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there was a movie I saw recently called Dead Man, the Jim Jarmusch movie, and I was very impressed with that, and reminded me of the movie Rumblefish and its device. It's actually a device and kind of a to get specifically filmic about it, in Rumblefish, when Rusty James is wounded and he actually gets knifed, if you remember that, right? And he's running around half the film with a hole in his body. He's bleeding, you know?
Yeah.
It seems to transfer to the viewer, you kind of feel that wound. And you're not sure if Rusty is, like, seeing things for real or if he's hallucinating. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so it kind of sets up a kind of drug-induced partnership between the actors and the viewer that places you in kind of a hallucinogenic state. And I think that was quite original for its time, although a lot of people didn't really – they didn't like that. But I think a lot of the critics tore the film apart because they just didn't like Coppola being an independent studio at that point. But I think at the end of the day when, you know, the world is over and history implodes, there'll be a pile of films and Rumblefish will be, you know, the art film for kids.
Yeah.
You know, it really is a great film.
It's true. Songs of yours that you've done in the past, like for Mosquitoes, when I was talking to Pat Holly, the drummer at one stage for Pansy Division, San Francisco band, he thought that Mosquitoes was the best album that he'd ever heard. Like within minutes of talking to him and saying, who do we like? This was it. And I particularly like off Mosquitoes, like Peg and Pete and Me as a concept. But as a hit song, beautiful pop song, Calling Out to Carol.
Yeah, that was that actually became a hit in Switzerland. It was number one in Switzerland and Norway. I was awful happy about that because it allowed me to make the next record.
Great.
You know, it's funny about these things because a lot of songs to me are like, they're like Polaroid snapshots, you know, and I don't think about them all the time, of course, but I won't lie to you and say that, you know, well, that's nice. I'm awfully pleased when songs go out and, you know, make a difference for people.
Sure. You often hear the song Salesman being used in the as incidental music for news items in Brisbane. There's somebody at the radio, at the TV stations here, rather, who likes Dan Ridgway.
Well, I mean, they use it as a backing thing.
Yeah, well, especially for one clip that I saw with our previous Prime Minister, Paul Keating, as he was going around selling himself to the general public in the election, and they just kept coming back to Salesman.
Huh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I should call him up and say, well, wait a minute, what is your platform?
He was actually a good guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we've got the demons in at the moment. But who knows? We don't know if we're there for a year or 6 years at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just now picking up on all of the political, you know, maelstrom of activity here in Australia and wondering what it all means. And everyone to me kind of looks like the same person at this point, although they all have a lot of placards and signs on the intersections here in town. Not quite sure who they are yet.
Right.
You know, we're going through our own election there in America, and the choice has really been made, I think, by mostly everybody that Bill Clinton will probably have a landslide. He's just a younger man. I think people are scared of Bob Dole dying in office, and also they think that he's it's the abortion issue and rights and things like that. And really, I don't know, we're in a big mess. It's always been a mess, though.
Yeah.
Funny, you know, people say, oh, the world's coming to an end, and, you know, as we get closer to the millennium and all that talk and stuff. And, you know, history just has a way of rolling over everybody after a while.
Yes, but you can do it more pleasantly or less pleasantly. What's happening in Queensland, a big thing that happened last week, they're looking at scrapping the local anti-discrimination commission, which means that, I do the queer radio show in Brisbane, but it means that even though about finally 3 or 4 years ago they made homosexuality legal in Queensland, what they're going to do by these changes to the funding of the anti-discrimination commission will mean that, right, you're legal, but people can abuse you, they can sack you, they can throw you out of a flat, and you won't have any place to take them to have anything done about it.
Are you saying that they want to repeal this?
Yeah.
So that they can say, well, we just don't want any gay people working here?
Yeah, what they're doing is just taking the protection away. They're saying you can be legal, but there's no place that you can go to actually have people hauled over the coals for abusing you over it.
Oh, you can't take them to like an anti-discrimination court.
That's right.
Or something like that, and say, well, let's just get the facts out. Yeah. You know, there's no forum for it.
Yep, which would be like not just a shame; it'll be a disaster.
Well, that would just be, you know, out and out discrimination.
Yep.
Out and out, you know. I mean, if you don't have a place to take it to, I mean, gosh, you know, there's places to take all kinds of other things. Why not this?
Yep.
You know. Yeah, the same thing's going on in America. You know, it's funny. It's just like, I mean, you know, the world spins. It takes all kinds of different people. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and what's really funny is when you examine the people that really want to, like, curtail personal freedoms, isn't there some sneaking suspicion that they've got some really ghastly skeleton in their closet or something? You know? I mean, it's like, it's just always that way. It reminds me of what happened to all the evangelists in America. You know, where you find out Jimmy Swaggart's, like, going down to, going down to,
yep,
to some prostitute's place, and while at the same time he's castigating everyone else for even thinking about anything. I think those are important. You know, I still vote, you know, of course, but I just vote for issues. It's hard to vote and look into the candidate's eye and for me to like really believe everything these people are saying. But when they come up with issues and they have things that they say they're going to do, they should do them. And if they don't, then you don't vote for them anymore.
That's right.
You know,
it's like from your song "Down the Coast Highway," the line, "Behind every fortune, there's got to be a crime."
Yeah.
That got a smile out of my friend Frank when he was listening to the album the other night too. But it's absolutely true.
Yeah, I had a real compliment on that song from a person that has become my friend named Van Dyke Parks, who did the ill-fated Smile record with Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Right.
And Van called me up on that song and he said, "Stan, that," and Van's a very southern from Mississippi, he's like a musical Tennessee Williams. And he said, "Stan, that line is a diamond." I said, "Van, thanks." And coming from a writer like him, I was quite,
it's wonderful,
quite flattered, yeah.
So with the drywall incident, that's not just a comic record, is it? It's rather serious.
Yeah, I would say it's serious, but at the same time, it tries to kind of examine a lot of the anger and refuse and alienation and disaster that was left after the L.A. riots, and that's where it kind of started, and it was also a place personally for me to go artistically mad. And to get away from my kind of solo persona and thinking of myself in that regard, you know. Have you heard the Drywall record?
No, not yet.
Oh.
It's something I'll send away for.
Well, now it's just come out here on TWA Records.
Fabulous.
And it also includes, it's a double record, because it also has the soundtrack to the Drywall Incident.
Right.
Which is a film that we made to accompany the Drywall recording, in an attempt to explain the trilogy of apocalyptic documents, which is what the Drywall record is. Let me back up here.
Okay.
There are three people in Drywall, and that is myself, Pietro Wexton, and drummer-percussionist Ivan Knight. The projected concept of our joining here is that there will be three Drywall recordings. The Drywall project is just simply the first one. Each recording will contain, or will be followed by, a half-hour, I'll put this in quotations, art film.
Right.
Whatever that means. And we have that now, and along with that, I score music, original music, for that film, so that will be a separate recording. And so there'll be three of these coming out up until the year 2000. I wouldn't really describe them as songs as much as I would describe them as sonic events.
Great.
With words. But there is certainly some absurd angle to a lot of the music, but I think it's like anything that I've gotten involved in. You know, I'm dead serious about my music, but I'm not that serious about, you know, myself.
So are you touring live sometime soon?
Well, we're actually down here kind of meeting and greeting the TWA people that are licensing our Birdcage recordings here exclusively. Uh-huh. And putting together a tour for next year.
Fabulous.
So we want to come back and, you know, tour and do what we did. One of the things that happens in a career like this, I guess, is that distributors change, contracts get all fumbled, things go on, and I found myself, having made a tour of Australia, like, what, in 87, 86?
Yeah.
And then, for some reason, not being able to get back because the distributor had changed for my parent record company, IRS, and I think it changed to EMI or something, and they were too busy selling Stevie Nicks. You know, and these things happen, you know. It's a long way to come.
That's true. Yeah, and it's not damn cheap.
No, it's not like driving to Barstow,
you
know, from Los Angeles or something. It's like, hey, you guys, I'd like to go back to Australia. Yeah, sure you would. You know, so this is what probably happens in Australia. There's probably, you know, the Americans that seem to come down here, if you have a big, huge, you know, hit single, the button gets pushed and you can go almost anywhere. But if, you know, that doesn't happen for you on that record, you have to find other avenues of how to, you know, take your circus around. And quite honestly, I feel very lucky at any successes I've had, but I'm spotty when it comes to the big money people. So that's why we're kind of going at this in a different way, an independent route, and a lot of the resources are far more happy to meet us.
Yeah.
Other than the big guys that are just not satisfied unless they sell like 3 million records, you know.
True. Well, hopefully when you actually do come to Brisbane with your tour next year, 4ZZZ will be involved in the promotion of that. We usually do get involved with good alternative acts.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yep.
Yeah.
But considering what a professional show you put on,
I'm glad you saw the show. So now you can tell all of your local promoters just how much money they'll make if they invest in this ridiculous freaky circus that I could bring down there.
Yes, I should.
You know, we'll all lose our shirts and have a drink, and then I'll go home.
So you'll be touring with Pietro Wexton?
Yeah, she'll be along. Uh-huh.
Great.
Pietro and I have known each other about 25 years.
Wow.
And we met each other at a Charlie Musselwhite show, the blues harmonica player.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 1975 or something, at the Troubadour in Los Angeles, and we've pretty much been together ever since.
Yeah.
And she has a new record out too.
Right.
Which is the Hecate's Angels project. Hidden Persuader, which is on TWA also. I don't know if you got that. Have you received that?
We haven't received that yet.
Well, it's probably on its way. My God, look at this. It's a fountain. A fountain of hits that are just piling out of Birdcage like so much bird seed.
Well, I'll certainly do my best to promote them. And I know you've got other friends here at 4ZZZ, like David Lennon, who does the talkback show here, just loves you.
So, send him my love.
I will. Thanks a lot for talking to us, Stan.
Well, thanks, John. And like, look, I have not met anyone yet who has been as disinformed.
Thank you.
And I want you to see if you can get your hands on a computer and jump on this crazy internet business and check out our webpage, because I think you'll be rightly entertained.
Great. You have a good trip. Well,
okay.
You're actually flying back tonight, aren't you?
No, I'm actually here for a couple of weeks.
Good move.
And we're going to play an in-store at Blockbuster Records in Sydney next week.
What?
We're going to be doing some music there. I'm actually rehearsing kind of like the best of the TWA All-Stars here, seeing what we can just put together. We couldn't bring the whole band down this time.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do. And then we're doing another performance at Gaslight Records in Melbourne, and as much as we can do with as much coin as we have in our pocket at
that's
the moment.
That's the thing. I realize Brisbane's just too far away.
Yeah, and we're just we're just working stuff out to come back in the new year. So we'll be in touch, John.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Okay, keep in touch with TWA here about like any things you need to know about what we're doing, and they'll take good care of you.
Thanks a lot, Stan.
Okay.
See you.
All the best.
Thanks.
Bye.